Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Techsplaining. This is Stephanie Donahue, and I'm here with my goofball friends, Mark Rackley, Rob Foster, and Brett, and Brett Lonsdale. He's making faces at me right now. So today we are going to be talking about content management. There have been a slew of updates that have come out here recently in the modern lists and sites. But before we get to that today, how are you guys all doing?
You know what? I have to say, it's really good to see all you guys. This is our first recording we're doing on our new recording platform, and I can see you now. It's great.
Absolutely, Rob. And that Batman box, it looks like it's going to fall on your head any minute.
All right. Yeah, I'm actually in my son's closet here. It's the only quiet place that I could find.
I'm resisting the urge to say anything about Rob in the closet. So hard.
Hey, after the show, I'm coming out. I promise. Yeah. So, how's everybody's week been? Been a good one. It's been a terrible week for me, but I went fishing today and caught a lot of fish, so I'm happy.
Good.
I miss fishing. Yeah, I've had a pretty good week. It's been somewhat of a strange week where I've not done anything that I intended to do this week. I've been extremely busy and productive, but not in the areas that I thought I would be. So, yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. How about you, Mark?
I've been trying to stay out of trouble, but it's not been working very well. So
don't you have a – isn't there a conference coming like that you're doing? I mean, how's that going?
So, well, since you bring it up, we are less than a month away to my conference, the North American Collaboration Summit. So it's now to that point where it's starting to take a little more time. So I have to make sure I balance that whole work-life conference balance. But no, it's going great. We had 53 registrations this week alone.
Wow.
So, yeah, big spike in registrations. The workshops are coming along well. We got the schedule posted. As soon as you give me your session, it's going to be posted. I'm a little scared at how smoothly things seem to be going. So.
Now, did you choose one of mine?
I think so. I know a guy.
You know a guy. Yeah, yeah. Hey, well, what you know, if for those that are interested in coming, where is it and when is it?
So the conference is in Branson, Missouri, which is smack dab right in the middle of the country. So it's easy for everybody to get to, right? And it takes place on March 2nd and 3rd. So this is a community-focused nonprofit event. So it only costs $65 to register. So it's a lot of – I've got 18 international speakers coming in. Brett's one of the guys. I've got a total of over 40 speakers. Most of them are MVPs because I organized it the weekend before the MVP summit. So I'm like, hey, guys, you're heading over here anyway. I'm not stopping Branson, and we'll have a good time. It's a lot of great content. A lot of the same sessions you'll see at like the European SharePoint Conference, Ignite and all that. So good stuff like that. We also have workshops on March 1st, which is optional. And if you want to attend those, it's like $275. So it's a really great way to get your training in there for a small budget, have a lot of fun in a great venue. It's at Branson Landing. You guys have been there before. It's a really, really great place to hold a conference. I enjoy it.
Yep. Great stuff.
You've been there before. What'd you think about it, Rob?
I thought it was great. I mean, I think it's a great location. It's far enough out of the way that you're not close to anything to really run off and get. So I mean, I guess it's not like having a conference in Vegas where there's a billion things you can do other than the conference, right? It's you're there for the conference. I think it's a very focused conference, and many of the speakers that are there. Well, actually, I think almost all of the speakers that are there are typically your A-listers that are at all the big conferences too. So I mean, I think it's a great in a smaller setting. It's a great way to connect with those speakers. And really, what I find at the smaller conferences like this is that you get to ask real questions, right? It's not where you're in a room with 2,000 people and nobody asks really, you know, there's no time for real questions. You can have an actual conversation with people. So I think that's great, and that's what I love about this conference.
Yeah, and the other thing I do that I like about than other conferences is that since it's on Branson Landing, you're like a short walking distance, like five or six different restaurants. And so instead of bringing in box lunches and pizza for everybody, I give them an hour and a half lunch to go eat wherever they want to eat. And a lot of the restaurants are giving discounts to the attendees to go and, you know, have drinks and food and hang out there and then come back and learn more stuff. So that's kind of fun. Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. Stephanie, how's your week been?
Same old, same old. Happily recovered in our family from the flu. We had one down this week. Nobody else got it. So I'm just grateful to be here, to be healthy. It's a good week.
No doubt. No doubt. That flu's scary stuff this year, for sure.
Yeah, it's been pretty bad all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
not in Arkansas.
Yep. Well, you are a little bit out in the middle of nowhere, Mark. A little bit.
Benefits. There's benefits.
Safety and isolation, right?
Yep.
Well, so do we want to dig in here to our topic of the day?
Yeah.
So conferences.
No more.
He asked. I did not bring it up.
I know.
You know what? I felt really bad that one time. Every time I give you crap about talking about your conference, so I really feel bad. But I want to make sure that we do promote it.
Well, did we ever say the name of it? If you go to collabsummit.org, that's the website, in case we forgot to mention it.
Yep.
And there you go.
Show notes are going to get added, aren't they, Stephanie?
Just edit that bit out.
I'm writing them as we speak.
Okay.
Right here. I'm working on it. Yep. All right. Well, so one of the things you can learn about at Collab Summit and all those other conferences, we are going to be talking today about content management in Office 365 and SharePoint. There have been a whole bunch of updates out there for SharePoint content management. Wanted to run through some of those. In the show notes, I will link the article that I shared with these guys today, going through a lot of the new stuff and the new features and things that you need to know about. So, which one to pick first? I think I'm going to pick on Mark here because he was pretty excited about this when he came across it. So I thought maybe we'd go with the bulk metadata updates first. So Mark, what did you think of that update?
So this is an update that we have clients have been asking for this stuff forever. One of the biggest problems that we have is people storing a large number of files in SharePoint and then needing to tag all those files with metadata. The only way we could really do that in the past was to do a quick edit view, a spreadsheet view of your files after you uploaded them, and then copy and paste a bunch of metadata in at once, which never really worked well unless you were in IE and it was an ActiveX control at that point in IE, and then that worked really well. But when they moved to this new Chrome, the version of the quick edit that works in Chrome and Edge and stuff, you can't do the bulk copying and pasting quite as well. So with this new bulk metadata feature, you can now upload a bunch of documents to a document library, and then you can go into a list view and select multiple documents. And after you select those documents, you can right-click and select details. And when you do that, it's going to bring up a property panel on the right-hand side of the screen, and whatever properties you set, it sets those properties for all the selected documents to the same thing. So you only have to do it one time, and after they're all uploaded. So we have a client that they store a lot of images and a lot of scripts and a lot of production information in SharePoint. So when they're working on a show, they may have to add hundreds of images for that show. And it's really hard to get the people that are uploading the images to actually tag the files appropriately with what show is this image for and that type of information. Well, now they have a tool that can do that. They can bulk upload the images, create a list view for those images, select them, and then edit the metadata in one place. So it's really, I've had customers asking about this for so long. It's a great, great, great tool, and I'm excited about sharing it with people.
What are you going to do with all your free time now that you don't have to script solutions to work around that? Yeah.
Whatever you tell me to do, right? That's the right answer.
That's always the right answer.
Yeah. What about you? So you picked on me about this, the bulk metadata. What feature did they announce or do you like the most? Are you most excited about?
That's a difficult one. I think I'm just excited in general that it's getting so much attention. Still waiting to see updates on document sets. I'm hoping to see that soon. That wasn't on the list yet. I think the move functionality is pretty critical. I think that's the second one that I'd be most excited about. I think that the ability to work within OneDrive and then move that document into SharePoint when I'm ready to share it with everyone else, that's also something that I've seen quite a bit that people naturally want to kind of protect their work before they're ready to share it with everyone. And I think that one will keep them from, potentially at least, keep them from working on their desktop and having it stored somewhere else until they're ready to share it and upload it into SharePoint. So I think that one's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that one's the one that's going to be the most education, though, because people still don't get that if it's in your OneDrive and not shared, people can't see it. I still have this tendency of users to want to have it on their desktop, so they want to know for 100% fact that nobody else can see it and edit it. So I think with the education piece there, it's important to know it's the best approach and it works. And my explanation is kind of fizzling out there, so someone else needs to jump in and take over.
Rob, you've been quiet. What do you think? Are you guys excited about any of these new features? I know you're rolling out Teams and stuff. You have access to some of this stuff. What do you think at a large scale?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. You put me on the spot here, but
how do you like it?
No. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, this week actually was a big week for Teams. They released a lot of new features for Microsoft Teams, and they kind of barreled into our tenant earlier this week. And I think it's been a fairly great rollout. I know with the command bar at the top of Teams, you know, you can do things now by, you can call people, you can search for documents, you can do a lot of things that it's kind of been needed, you know, and Teams, especially as you start really using them and become members of more and more teams, finding content becomes somewhat challenging, right? Because unless you go to the teams that you in the past, you go to the teams that you're always working in, you know, as you get added to 40 and 50 teams, it really does become a challenge to find content once, I know I was working on that document, but which team was it in? You know, and now with a lot of these command line tools they've got at the command bar at the top of the Teams client, you can find this content now and you can do things, right? You can do things like you can join a team or you can call somebody and you can see somebody's activity and really say, hey, I know I was talking with Stephanie on this one thing and what else has she been doing? So you can look at her activity and see kind of what Stephanie's been up to as well. So I think this week's been a great week for some of the new features for Teams. Doesn't really have anything to do with content management, which I know is the show topic, but that's my world.
Well, it does though, doesn't it? I mean, when we talk to customers, we talk a lot about the division between where to put my content, right? Does it belong in SharePoint? Does my content belong in Teams? How do I differentiate between the two? Because Teams kind of, you know, it rides on top of SharePoint. So, you know, it's kind of confusing if I'm moving my files into Office 365 from my file share, being able to sort that out and say, you know, which one am I going to use? Am I going to use the Teams interface or the SharePoint interface? You know, our general guidance is if it's meant for more publishing type content, more readers, less collaborators, it might go just into SharePoint. But then if we're moving things from a file share in a very collaborative area, maybe that goes into Teams. And so I think that is part of the conversation, right?
I think for old schoolers in the SharePoint space, to me, Teams is very much like a more modern, if I could use the word modern, version of the document workspace and meeting workspaces and so on. You know, if anybody remembers back then.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember. We're migrating off of document, or I think it was a meeting workspace. We've got a customer that has many, many, many meeting workspace sites. So I think AvePoint has a replacement solution, but I don't know if there's anybody else. Brett, do you know of anybody who's got a replacement for that you've seen?
I do not. Nope.
No. it is kind of funny.
I could try and make somebody up, but
well, it is kind of funny though that we're actually trying to solve this problem as well, and there's not really at this time a good way to transition from Teams to a more formalized published location of, you know, like say in SharePoint. I think about this, we've got this problem where we've got this group of executives and they're working on all of these documents, right? And they're the collaboration portion of their documents, you know, they're working really hard to build these things, right? The end result is kind of a delivered document that we're going to reference and, you know, we do whatever, you know, somebody's going to deliver a document. And that document is all that everybody cares about, except for this one team of executives that's building the document, and they care about the collaboration around that document, right? They're having conversations, they're having meetings, they're having all of this collaborative work to build this document that's a deliverable that then needs to go to some formalized location, like a SharePoint site or something like that. And I think that's the next step is being able to move that content from Teams to a more formalized location for consumption by the masses, right? Which Teams is more conducive to consumption by the people that are building the document.
Right.
Consumption of the masses is for, you know, everybody else that wants to consume that document. Like when I read that document, I don't care about the work it took to get it to make that document.
So right. Are we talking here about some form of integration with you know, records management and Teams?
Either a record or at least give me a way to say, I want to publish this now and push it over here as a version of this document into a formal area, right?
So I think we're getting close there because we're talking about there's that the new move functionality mm-hmm. within OneDrive, and we've got now a really recent Teams update was to add accessibility to Flow in there as well. So that's in there. So I think I would imagine we're pretty close to that being able to happen. One of the other updates on the just from January in content management was the ability to approve and publish a document in a flow. So being able to take it from draft format into a fully published version, all of those three things just happened. So I feel like we've got to be on the verge of that kind of being completed and being able from the Teams view, being able to publish that into SharePoint into an area of more like an intranet area mm-hmm. from a collaboration space. I really hope that's happening.
Well, it sounds like jigsaw pieces are there, but we just need to complete the puzzle, right?
Yep. Well, one of the cool things about the new move to function is it actually uses the graph to try to just show you relevant places to move that document to. So, you know, like Rob was saying, you're working with all these different teams, you've got access to all these different teams. Well, if you're using the move to functionality, it's going to try to show you what's relevant to you and what you use most often. So that's also going to help you, especially those executives who are stubborn, right? If they're going to be doing a move, it's going to show them the places they go to most often and hopefully alleviate some of that frustration of looking for where am I moving this to?
Yeah. And being able to have that, not only that workflow built in, but being able to publish new versions of things as it comes out, right? I think that's super important. Not that it's just a one-way document push, but it's also connected back to the original document itself, right? And I think that's key for us is that as these things change, we still want to publish documents, not just in a one-time push, one-time move. We want to be able to say, okay, we've made some revisions. Let's go publish version 2 now and then publish it over the top of that. And I think that's like Stephanie says, I think we're close, and I really believe that's going to happen hopefully by summer, you know, to make it really easy. I think we can customize something today, but to make it just seamless to where it's just baked into the product is really where I'd like to see it go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I know some people on the product team listen to our podcast, so maybe they're hearing this feedback and they'll implement it. So.
Wink, wink, hint, hint. All right, so what else do we have on the list here? So kind of going back to metadata for a minute, something that came up with one of our customers this week, it had actually confused them a little bit. They had found the new properties panel within Microsoft Word, so they had it all pulled up, and they had that Word document attached to a SharePoint library, and so for those that remember the document information panel of old, it used to be at the top of your Word document, easy to find and update your metadata. And then I think in, was it 2013 or 2016, they took that away and you had to go into your file drop down and see info and you could do your metadata updates there, but it was a lot more difficult to find and understand. So I'm pretty excited they've brought that metadata panel back into Word on the right-hand side where it's really easy to find when you're working from the client. But what they were confused about was then they went into PowerPoint, I think, in the same library, and it didn't have that panel yet. And they said, oh, it's broken. We don't have metadata. And I said, wait. I showed them, you know, the old information panel so that they could update things there. And I showed them the new attention views in the list view, which we can talk about more in a minute. So there's a couple different ways now. There's three different ways to update your metadata. And for someone who is brand new to SharePoint, they found that to be a little confusing, right? Mm. It just didn't make sense to them because they were looking for that consistency. So what's good for us is that we had a really great conversation about it and where things are headed. They now understand all of that. But I do think that as we shift into some of these updates and they get applied in one place and not the other, that is something we have to be conscious of because that lack of consistency can be a little bit confusing.
I used to really like the document information panel back in the popular BCS days as well. It was always a great great feature to have an external data column. You're looking up from an external database and being able to update that column from within something like Word as well. So you're, you know, able to tag your metadata just simply whilst you're creating the document. That was a really nice feature. So yeah, it's great to see that back again.
Well, we had a client that had hundreds and hundreds of documents that were all based on the same template, and the title property was set in the Word document to test 1, 2, 3. And so they had all these documents they've been maintaining using this one template to create them all. So they've got hundreds of documents, and you pull them into Search in SharePoint. SharePoint doesn't use the name field in the list. It uses the title property from the Word document. So they all had the same title property in search results.
That's a mess.
Ever cleaning that up. So
I as never great got as they that. Are,
yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Mm. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn this into a rant. But.
Well, no, maybe we should bring that to people's attention using the attention view, right?
Yeah.
What so is Brett, the why don't you explain that seamless. A little bit?
So, I've read a little bit about it. I've not seen it in action, but the attention view makes a lot of sense. Where there are users that are in a hurry. I've not seen people entering test 1, 2, 3 inside the title field, but certainly a lot of people leave it blank. One of our products is a content roll-up tool, and users, our customers are aggregating content. That's one of the things they always mention is the title field's always blank. It's like, yeah, because your users don't fill it out. we get them to expose the name field instead. And that has the file name. You can do things like drop the file extension so it looks a bit tidier. At least that's always guaranteed to be completed. People do put documents in. They don't fill out the metadata. Therefore, the findability suffers, filters suffer, and it's, for want of a nicer word, it's the rubbish in, rubbish out scenario. You know, you're not going to be able to find your content easily if people haven't bothered to take the time to put the metadata in. But yeah, I get it. People are busy and they maybe don't have time to do that sort of thing. So the attention view is identifying documents that require your attention. They haven't been completed as far as the metadata is concerned. So it brings that to your attention. You can then spend time on populating that that metadata. And I know there's, you know, talking about third parties again, not us, but there's lots of other vendors. I came across a new one this week called Aquaforest that have a lot of search tools that do things like, you know, OCR recognition on PDFs and so on, and automatically populate metadata based on the document content. So certainly I think, you know, it's a problem that the industry recognizes. They had a customer that has something like 3 billion documents or something like that inside their environment. And a lot of them were PDFs. They were documents that had been scanned into document libraries and people weren't filling out metadata. So by buying the Aquaforest tool, that was automatically populating with metadata for them. So without something like that, I can see where the attention view at least highlights the problem and gets users to fill that content out.
So with
what's going to happen now?
Go ahead, Mark.
So I said what's going to happen now is because of the great new attention view and the bulk metadata, the lazy user is going to say, show me everything that needs my attention, and then they're going to bulk update it all to some garbage metadata that does not help at all. So that's not to say it's not a great feature. It's totally a great feature. You make something idiot-proof, and they make better idiots. And so...
Well, so I actually had kind of a sidebar question on your comment there, Brett, with the amount of documents that were in the environment that you were referring to. Was it
that was another seamless link? That was another seamless link.
So, you know, one of the things we've heard a lot about is that 5,000 item limit that we're dealing with in SharePoint. And so potentially that customer having so many documents in their environment may have hit that limit. I don't know if they were on-prem or online. But one of the other updates that have recently been released is the predictive indexing and queries. That idea that if you've got a lot of information in there, that it's going to automatically create some of those indexes for you to improve performance. And I thought it was interesting. That's ongoing as far as the rollout, and they're going to be updating environments all the way through Q4 of last year. So I guess it took a little while to get that rolled out, but it should be up and running for everyone. But have you guys run into that? Are you guys seeing any relief from those large list views?
I think it's more of a question for Rob. We don't produce anywhere near that amount of content.
So. No. No, it's good.
So what do you guys do? You just create folders?
Lots of folders.
You're a really large environment, so just folders is kind of the approach still?
Yeah, lots and lots of folders.
I'd love to hear from anybody who listens to the show. If you guys have an experience with that, we'd love to hear how you guys are handling that and if that predictive index thing is helping. I know we've got a couple projects coming up where we'll be kind of hitting some of those limits and trying to figure out, you know, if this is helpful and where, you know, if we're still hitting any limitations at all. Because folders is kind of always our fallback too.
Yeah, because we're just at a point now where it's supposed to be better. And certain aspects are better, but it's not 100% better, and it's not all fixed. So we're still a little skittish about embracing large lists because we don't know what's going to break because we know it's not fully fixed yet or fully addressed yet in a way that users want it to be addressed. So I would, I'm always interested to hear how people handle the issues they run into with large lists.
Well, one thing that I'm excited about testing, I've not tested it yet, though, is actually querying those items is meant to be a lot better as well. So, you know, that's something that obviously, again, we do a lot with the aggregation of content. So I'm hoping that the performance using maybe the client-side object model or something like that is improved. I mean, obviously, you could build roll-ups using search and so on where that didn't see the problem anyway. But, if you're doing an iteration through items, has that been improved as well?
Yeah, I would say that's probably been the biggest thing is once we did have an extremely large amount of stuff in a list, we would automatically just go and use the search technique to get the content back just because it was basically the only way you could do it, right? Mm-hmm. You really run into performance issues. I think we ought to kind of keep tabs on this and really see how this is going because I think it's going to be this is one of those things that you don't really know you need it until you do. And then when you do, it's too late. You know, I think this is going to be one of those things that's right. I mean, I think this is going to be one of those game changer things that's going to make that experience just that much more smooth for people that, you know, that may or not, may bump into these limits that once they do, it's too late.
Yeah. Forgetting to index a column after you go over 5,000 items. It's like,
But yeah, one of the problems obviously using search is you don't get the real-time updates. And also with Office 365 or SharePoint Online, you have no control on when your search index updates.
Search is also not wonderful for aggregating content, right? It's good for...
It depends which product you use, but yeah, I agree.
You know, it's a pretty good product.
So what's a really good product for aggregating search results?
I think Lightning was in the name somewhere.
So we actually have a project we might need to contact you for. So see, it's about networking, folks.
So yeah, we're not here to do the podcast. We're just here to get help from each other. So.
Okay, so one of the things you can do in the Lightning Conductor is conditional formatting, and I think that's another new feature that we'll have another seamless link to. So now in SharePoint lists, you can add conditional formatting, right?
That's right. So why don't you tell us about this conditional formatting on those lists?
Yeah, so...
I need to learn about it because I'm actually speaking about it at the SharePoint North America conference.
Oh, there you go.
So I need to learn, so please explain it to me.
One of the things you can do, unfortunately, I think Microsoft might have got this slightly wrong. In a SharePoint list, you can take a column and you can add conditional formatting on it. So relatively sort of straightforward scenarios, you could take a task list and let's say if something's high priority, you might want to highlight that in a certain color or use different emotion icons, use data bars or whatever you want to do is conditional formatting, similar to what you can do in something like Microsoft Excel. I think where they've got it slightly wrong is you have to implement this in JSON. Now, to me, this is something that it's a bit like the content by search web part and the content query web part, where you're rolling up content was a power user's role in my eyes, and as is adding some conditional formatting to a SharePoint list. However, obviously, you're not going to have power users that have necessarily JSON skills, and they're therefore going to have to reach out to developers in the organization if they have them, or it's going to be going out to a consultant to add that functionality. So I think it'd be great if Microsoft actually made some form of UI to be able to add conditional formatting rather than just giving you a box where you can enter some JSON. But I know Vesa, he did a good blog post. There's some great examples of using the motion icons, using data bars and things like that, that you can add into some of the standard lists.
Yeah, you would think that would be fairly easy to come up with some kind of JSON builder or something like that. At least some kind of something that sits over the top.
Yeah.
I actually worked on one for a little bit because I was going to be I want to be the first with something, and the JSON object's pretty extensive, and there's a few limitations to it. Like if you want to apply multiple styles to the same element, you actually have to duplicate the JSON property. You can't. It's a very complicated JSON object, so I can see why there's not an interface to it yet, but. I do know that there's got to be examples. People are going to start posting examples. So I think that anybody who doesn't know it, there's just going to be a wealth of people from the community saying, here's a template for how to do it by due date, by status, how to create a bar, and all that stuff. So yeah, I wouldn't freak out about the JSON. It is a limitation, but I think there's going to be so many examples out there that people will be able to copy and paste for the most part what they want to do. Mm.
Well, I think we've come to the end of our list of the new updates. You guys have any other thoughts? What else is important for content management? Maybe permissions? I don't know that we've had any updates on the permissions front. Brett, any thoughts? I know you guys have a tool for that too. What do you
think about? I don't see it sponsored by Lightning Tools anywhere on this episode. Permissions is a space that we've always been in. at least for the last 10 years or so. Microsoft has made quite a few improvements. And what we hear all the time is users coming to us and saying, how do you disable the share button and so on?
Collaborating allowed.
Right. Yeah. So, I think there's a lack of education around the share button. One of the things that I don't like about the share button is the fact that you click share and the default thing that happens is it takes that user, at site level, it takes that user and puts them inside the members group, but the members group by default has edit permissions. That to me is a problem. one of the things I always educate people on is how you can change the default group for a site. So I tend to have them go through create new group, maybe give it contribute permissions or a custom permission level, make that group the default group, and then when you share the site, they go into that new default group and then make it contribute permissions or less or something. So that way they're not getting the ability to go and delete entire lists and libraries of content and so on, or even share. So you can share something externally and the user that you shared it with gets the ability to share externally again. So that's an issue as far as I'm concerned. So the default group thing helps out there. I think another issue that I'd like to see is the inconsistency with sharing. So if you go into a document or a folder and click share, that breaks the permission inheritance and assigns a direct permission. So users perhaps expect the same behavior that they got on the site level at the document level, yet they're not getting it. And of course, you're having the issue of broken permission inheritance without them maybe realizing it.
I didn't realize that. That's a pretty big one.
Yeah. It's really inconsistent. So I'd like to see that tidied up. One area that I've seen is new is, and maybe I haven't got this quite right, but you go into a modern list or library and there's a new dialogue. So when you go to share an item, you're actually sending a link to, and that's not the same as sharing, if that makes sense. So that whole experience has changed, and I think, again, that's going to be a bit confusing to some users.
So that's pretty new. I think the little pop-up window, it looks totally different for sharing than it used to. And I noticed with the most recent update of my office on my desktop, actually it has that, you talk about consistency, it actually has the same window that pops up now that I get on SharePoint in the new modern sites for share. So I thought that was interesting that they're trying to make that a consistency across both, you know, whether you're in SharePoint or you're in your office client, it now looks the same, which I think is nice.
Part of some of the controls and stuff we have to implement, is things like the amount of time that an anonymous link is available. I mean, do you guys monitor that or change that in any of your customers' tenants, or is that something that we it's just unique to us?
Rob, I had this conversation yesterday, actually. Steven Wilson on our team at Pate brought that to my attention. He said, gosh, you know, nobody's updating this. Nobody's really thinking about it. And I told him, I said, you know, why don't you come up with a list of suggestions that just should be baseline when you implement SharePoint. You need to go run through that list of options when you set up your SharePoint tenant and set something like that, because that's really important. And people don't tend to have that set. I don't know that was always available, right?
But yeah, well, it's been there, but I think the minimum you could do it was 7 days. But I think they've recently changed that, where you can take it down to at least 1 day now. And it's little things like the default sharing link, right? When you create a share by default, I think you can have it go to anybody that has permissions to that file, or which means you have to be a member of either that team or that site to be able to see it. Or you can change it to say, well, let's make it to where anybody in my organization can view this file. So I have to log in and I can get to the file. Or you can say, just make it a truly anonymous link and let anybody that has that link, you know, without a prompted login, be able to go and get to that file. So you can change like the default settings of things like that too, which I think should go on that list, because that is massive and does introduce a lot of risk depending on what you have set there.
I believe there's an improvement around external sharing too, before, when you shared with somebody externally, you could share it with a corporate email address, but of course they may not actually sign in with that corporate email address. They might sign in, you know, they need a Microsoft account. Maybe that corporate email address is not a Microsoft account. So yeah, they could be using a Hotmail account, or they could be using their Xbox account or something. So now you don't actually quite recognize these users and who's actually got permissions to your content. So I think now you can, one of the new options I believe I saw in the admin panel is the fact that you can force it to be certain domains that can access it.
Yeah. Yes. Which I think is great, you know, I think that's the flexibility there is just really good to see. Especially once you start sharing and those people start editing that document, right. It's really important that you secure it properly, right. So that you can make sure that, you know, content flows in and out of your system in a very defined way. Right.
Thank you for once again listening to Tech Explaining. As always, I am Mark Rackley with my illustrious hosts, co-hosts, Brett, Rob, and Stephanie. If you have any questions, comments, or have an idea for a podcast, please email us at info@techexplaining.net. Listen to us on iTunes, tell your friends, and have a great day. Thanks.